Welcome back to Disney Dependent. I'm Sarah Chilcott.
And I am the memory of a millennial slash Gen X guy. Woo!
Okay.
He's back, baby!
You're looking quite slim right now.
Oh.
Who, me?
Yeah, you. I mean, Ashley always, but you.
Oh, wow. I thought I was gaining weight, so that's good.
Well, you might be. They say the camera takes off 10 pounds.
Yeah, they do. Right?
Here's the deal.
Isn't that true? Isn't that what we were just talking about?
Yeah.
I am just a floating head in space.
Yes, camera takes off 10 pounds. That's what they say.
I really hope that's not the case because I need to be really concerned if that's true for myself. I'm like, yeah, oh, dude. God.
Oh, no. It's going the wrong way.
You're not even looking good 10 pounds lighter. Yeesh.
You look great. You look great. I was full on sugar boy again in the past really like 2 months straight, dog. I got back off the candy kick. So maybe that's why you're noticing a slimming in the face.
Yeah. So sugar boy.
Oh, dude, I was full on sugar boy.
The specialist sugar boy of all.
Mm-hmm. That's me. I love my candy.
Well,
I love them so much.
This weekend is Easter.
It
will come out on, is that Easter Monday? Is that what that technically is?
Sure.
I don't keep track
April
of
Fool's
holidays.
Day.
Sure.
But, April Fool's. Bummer that you guys won't be here.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you a funny thing that I came up with. So I made Easter baskets for all three of my kids and all three of their significant others.
Okay.
I mean, they're just little nothings. But my youngest, Kate's, they're not calling each other boyfriend and girlfriend yet, but that guy, he's Catholic. And so I was thinking, oh, it would be kind of cute to put like something special in there. Well, I had a glass and a half of wine last night and started thinking that it would be really cute to put like Bible verses about Easter. But of course, I can't control myself and started looking for funny Bible verses. I didn't end up doing it because when I woke up this morning, I was like, that's a terrible idea. But it got me on a kick of looking for hilarious Bible verses. And Reddit did not disappoint. Okay. These are my two favorites that I found just last night. I was laughing so hard, I thought I was going to pee myself. So Psalms 137:9 says, happy is the one who seizes your infants and dashes them against the rocks.
What? Yep.
What?
Yeah. Out of context. Love it. Don't know what that's about.
Smashing babies.
Gotta smash some babies.
Seize your infants and smash them against the rocks.
Seize them.
Whose infants? I don't know.
Maybe your own.
And why does that make you so happy?
Maybe that's what seize the day comes from. Seize the day.
Maybe.
Smash baby skulls.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Carpe diem.
Carpe Bebe.
You did it.
Okay. And then this one, I was just reading them out loud before, like pre-reading them to Josh. And this one had us rolling. Okay. Numbers 12:1. And Miriam and Aaron spake against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman he had married. For he had married an Ethiopian woman. Redundant much?
Yeah.
And the commenter wrote right below that, you can literally see the moment where the writer thought, oh, fuck, I forgot to mention that earlier.
Yeah. Also, I mean, Numbers? Could they not have come up with a better name for a chapter or whatever they're called?
I believe Numbers is the one that's just basically talking about how many people are in each nation. It's like...
Right. It's just
really, truly data. Is just, it's a numbers game. You
it's
know?
A census. It's the census back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so we grew up in church and I even spent not quite a full semester in a Bible college. So I feel like I've heard and read a lot of these things, but it's funny so many years later to kind of just dip my toe back in and just start reading Bible verses out of context.
Yeah.
It's funny.
It is funny. It's
the
wild.
Way that it's written is like, it's not even Shakespearean. It's like backwards talk, like Yoda is speaking half the time. Anyway, I just thought that was really funny.
I love the John Mulaney bit about Psalms, how it's almost songs,
But well, there's Songs of Solomon too, or Song of Solomon is another.
Right.
Yeah.
But like in church, they go like, okay, go to Psalms, something, we're going to sing together.
Yeah.
It's not a song. They're psalms.
Psalms is just poetry.
Almost a word.
Badly written poetry. Yeah.
Well, before we do our usual thing, and you guys know what that is if you listen to this podcast, okay, you're about ready for that thing.
I love to think this is someone's first episode.
If it is, welcome to the madness. We are the most entertaining, most valuable podcast that you could check out.
We're currently number one.
In, there's leaf blowers. There's talk of just...
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you may want to listen to NPR and, you know, all this BS that actually matters. But I encourage you to listen to Disney Dependent, where we talk about nothing. yeah, before, how's everyone doing?
Doing my stomach good. Hurts.
Sarah says pretty good. Ashley says my stomach hurts.
Yeah.
I just ate so much garlic that at least I don't have to worry about vampires. Kate was making me pasta, and she goes, Mom, how much garlic is too much garlic? And I said, I don't understand the question. And she goes,
So
that's what she went with. It was great.
Oh, that's scary. Katie deciding how much of anything is
she
a terrifying thought.
She is so much better at cooking than I am now, let alone when I was 16.
Ooh, I like that. Ashley, talk about your stomach. What's going on?
James and I both had a stomach bug a few days ago.
We did.
And it's still lingering.
Mine has finally cleared up.
Yeah.
But it was pretty neat.
Yeah.
Did I poop a lot? I did. Was it a healthy, fun kind of like, really? Ooh, I feel, No.
I
kind of peed out of my butt. Gushing out of my pee-hole.
You're whispering so quiet that I cannot hear you, and I know neither can the listeners.
I was saying nothing of value, so it doesn't matter.
Just whispering about the consistency of your non-poop.
Yeah, I hear something off the design!
This just in, it's something that my app's slow. 54 and rain at not Disneyland.
I'm so glad you took all that time because I also needed it to open, and it's 64 and sunny out in Long Beach, California. Woo!
Woo! It's funny how much I rely on Ash to tell me the weather.
Like, no shit.
When we were sitting in the studio, it was always prepared for me.
Yeah.
I just glanced up at the thing and didn't have to think about it. And yeah.
Hey, before we do the break thing, Scott from Flying House, if you're listening, you're probably not because you're an adult.
With things to do.
Yeah. Running a company and a firefighter and a dad. If you're listening, we're going to Disneyland with him. May 8th, it sounds like. He's coming up to do some stuff and content stuff for the brand, and we're going to hang out with him. And I'm really excited about it. Yeah. Sarah, if you happen to be in Southern California in about a couple months, not even.
I would totally make that happen, but Lauren's graduating a couple days before and I have to take the whole weekend off. So
fairly
it's going to be a long weekend.
She's graduating.
Festivities. Yeah, wow. From college. I'm
so pissed
from
I won't
nursing
be there.
School.
Well, I just talked to Mom and Dad earlier today. Because I'm going back to Portland. I'm visiting Portland soon here, and I'm so excited.
Yeah. Less than a month. Wait.
Yeah, about 3 weeks. Something like
that.
Sweet. Yeah.
Last week, we talked about Dolly and Owen Pope and the house that they lived in at Disneyland.
Yeah.
But the Witherill bungalow that became the Pope House was not the only house co-opted by Disneyland from the Orange Grove days. Another one of those farmhouses that Disney purchased and used as a park structure was the Dominguez House, once owned by the Dominguez family as part of their 10-acre family orchard.
Ooh.
This week, we're talking about their legacy and how one of the Dominguez children eventually grew to be known as Mr. Disneyland.
Hey, that's me. I'm Mr. Disneyland.
Yeah, but you're the only person that calls you that, and he has, like, an entire world of people that call
I
him.
Beg to differ. When I walk down Main Street USA, all I hear is, oh my God, it's Mr. Disneyland.
You're Duke Disneyland.
I'm Duke?
Yeah. You're royalty, man.
Yeah. See? Yeah. I don't need to be Mr.
You jumped the line.
Duke Disneyland. I live in the attic of the castle.
I realized something today.
Yeah.
That I am wearing Flying House Threads merch every day that I'm not at work.
Yeah.
The last, I think, three podcasts we've done, I've been wearing one of my shirts from them. And now I put on one of my shirts this morning and thought, ooh, that's the same one I've been wearing for the last couple of weeks. They're going to think I just wear that shirt exclusively. And so I put a hoodie on to cover it. And now I'm wearing my Lilo Surf Shop hoodie.
You know, it's funny. A lot of the Flying House merch that we wear is like their early, early stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think the Lilo, it's one of the first things they ever put out. If yeah. not the first thing. It's something like that. It's like the first three or something.
Mm-hmm. I was wearing this yesterday at the grocery store and a guy asked me if I was a surfer. And I was I thought he said server. And I'm like, excuse me? He's like, do you surf? And I was like, no. And he's like, oh, you're wearing a surf sweatshirt. And I was like, I'm actually a total poser.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a Disney knockoff of Ron John's and it's my favorite sweatshirt.
That's like when I was at Fred Meyer one day wearing our own Everest design and some older dude that was very fit and like active looking. He was like, oh, have you been to Everest? And I like looked down and I just laughed. No.
In fact, I scaled Everest 5 times in one day.
That's right. Okay, back to the main program. A quick overview of the land in question. The word Anaheim is a combination of Anna, after the nearby Santa Ana River, and Heim, a German word meaning home. So it was a home by the river.
That's right.
Oh, that's cute. I remember that, but didn't remember that.
Yeah, exactly.
Anaheim was founded in September 1857 by 50 German-Americans who had all originally come from San Francisco.
Whoa.
The city was later incorporated in 1878.
I love when there's stories of, you know, such place was founded by 50 people.
Yeah, 50 families.
50 Germans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, like, imagine that. They roll into this area, which they didn't found, by the way.
No, it was well founded.
Yeah, for a while. We'll just go with that. It is funny, though, that, like, that's how it used to be. Just a handful of families can just say, this is a place now. I wish I could do that.
You could.
You'd be crazy and probably be labeled like a cult leader, but you could do it. Like, just roll up to some sort of small town in Nebraska and be like,
This is mine. Yeah.
Founded by James Ian MacMillan.
You could call it Jamestown and then not have everyone die from Flavor Aid.
Yes.
I'm going with everyone dies.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Well, I'm not going then.
Okay. I'll stay here.
There's a guy out in the desert of California, like the Salton Sea area.
Yeah.
Remember that, Sarah? The Salton Sea?
Yeah.
Very weird.
The stinkiest little lake.
Yeah. There's a town out there. Town, I use that very loosely.
East Jesus.
I don't know if that's called, but there's a guy that says that it's his own country.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm. And it's sort of kind of recognized as such. Right. It's not really.
We're going there later this year.
I thought you were saying later today.
Yeah.
No. Well, shit.
So we'll report back.
Yeah, yeah.
So the new owners intended to use the land to make wine as the Anaheim Vineyard Company. From 1860 to 1885, Anaheim wineries produced more than 1.25 million gallons of wine annually. In 1885, a strange disease attacked the vines, and within 5 years, the 2 million vines that made up this huge vineyard were dead.
Does that make you sad?
Yes. So sad. Citrus trees were planted instead and proved more successful thanks to the local hills, which protected the fruit against the cold winds coming down from the mountains. Other crops that prospered in Anaheim included walnuts and chili peppers. And note, please see episode 127, The Little White House, for more info on all of that backstory we covered in great detail.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Disneyland himself said, quote, In the late 1890s, my maternal grandfather came here from Iowa and purchased 30 acres of Orange County land. At first, he planted a walnut grove, then in 1910, changed the walnuts for oranges. In 1920, my mother, Laura, married Paul Dominguez, who was part of the family that had the Bernardo Yorba enormous land grants in Southern California. My folks built a house there in 1925. I was born in that house in 1935. After I had spent years weeding and tromping through my family's orange grove, I was surprised to hear my parents talk about selling the property to a man who had driven by in a convertible a couple of times.
Aww.
That man was Walt Disney. People had made offers for our land since 1951 or so, but my mother was never interested.
Imagine having that memory, being someone that has a memory of Walt Disney driving around.
Some just, city slicker coming to town.
With one of those mustaches the guys back then had. And he's just like snooping around, asking about land. Very interesting.
In the mid-1950s, Anaheim was a small, quiet, simple, rural community, and before Disneyland, agriculture was the primary industry. The city jail had only two jail cells, and police officers had to supply their own cars while on duty. A brochure from before Disneyland was built described it as, quote, "No better place to live, Anaheim, the city of beautiful parks in the heart of the Southland."
Boy, has it changed now.
Now we call it Anacrime.
No. No. Yeah. It's fine. I just find Anaheim to be very, very boring.
Lackluster.
There's nothing charming about it anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, they're really... I mean, there's a handful of neighborhoods, handful of parks, but as a whole, it's like kind of my least favorite part of Orange County. That little cluster, it just all looks the same.
But it has the happiest place on earth.
But it does have Disneyland. And for that, we love it.
Well, unfortunately, too, it's probably due to that, that it is kind of lackluster outside the gates.
Yeah.
Kind of taken over.
Yep.
In 1955, the city had a population of about 15,000 people and was 4 square miles.
What?
Yeah, that's it.
Wait, the city was technically 4 square miles?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm.
As Anaheim city manager from 1950 to 76, Keith Murdoch said, quote, "We were looking to improve the economic status of the city by attracting new industries. We looked at Disney as another industrial opportunity."
Yeah. That worked out.
That'll do it. The orange growing business was going through hard times, and the landowners welcomed this opportunity to get out. For the most part, they knew it was Disney, and because he was buying the land, they felt they were getting a good price.
Okay. Did they?
Always trust a guy with a mustache and a convertible.
I hope they did.
I think they did.
I hope these families did well, because it's hard for me, because it is a bummer that Anaheim has changed so much, or just really anywhere, Southern California in general, was once very, very beautiful. It still is in many areas, but you know what I mean? Like it's a sprawl now. There's a lot of people, a lot of city, a lot of concrete.
And the nature of California is still beautiful.
Oh, very much so.
It's just that there's so much blocking that.
Yeah. And I mean, look, there are still like just gorgeous towns on the coast in Orange County. But anyway, what I was going to say is it's easy for us to be romantic about those times and reminisce like, oh, what it was like back then in Anaheim. It was just like farmland and groves. And that's true. However, these families were working class people growing oranges for a living. And like you said, they were like, this is a good opportunity to get out, because it was tough. Mm-hmm. And there were hard times.
Yeah. Ron Dominguez, Mr. Disneyland, continues his tale. Quote, "Selling those 10 acres was real emotional for my mom, who had struggled to hang on to our house and land and make the groves pay after her dad died. She definitely did not envision that it would ever become part of a magical kingdom." The two real estate men who put the deal together were personal friends of the family, Ed Wagner and Frank Miller. They assured her that she was selling to a quality organization. Walt invited us all up to the studio to see a presentation so we could see it wasn't going to be a typical dirty amusement park. He was very convincing. She finally agreed to sign the necessary papers, and we were the last of the original 17 families to move out.
Wow.
He says, I'm glad my parents decided to sell. Business was always slow at the fruit stand anyway.
So there you go.
There was a man who was caretaker for one of the orange groves, and Walt hired him for about a year to keep the trees watered until they decided what they needed to keep. The man lived in one of the houses that had been moved. Most of the land was cleared by August, and some of the trees on the property, on our property, ended up in the jungle cruise.
Oh, no way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
He continues, quote, I can remember the bulldozers uprooting the nearby orchards starting July of 1954, and we didn't pack up until August because our new house wasn't ready yet. When we left, we were stepping around ditches and holes because the work was already being done.
Crazy.
They took our house and a house from the Callens estate and put the two together for the administration building.
There you go.
Another Callens house was used as the personnel office on West Street for the first 3 years or so. The day we moved out, we were walking in ditches and holes. Things were popping up around us because construction had to move ahead. They built Disneyland in a year.
They did, technically. They opened it.
Technically.
And it was rough, and there was a lot of donkeys.
There were a lot of donkeys and...
dirt berms.
Yes, a lot of berms.
Yes. But thank God they did open it.
Ron continues, I had graduated Anaheim High School and was at the University of Arizona, and my parents kept telling me about all these lines of people along West Street where the personnel office was looking for work at Disneyland. I think they began interviewing in January of 1955. I told my parents to get in touch with Earl to see if he could get me an interview when I came home in early May. I got a job as a ticket taker at the front gate. I was 19 years old.
Wow, you lucky son of a bitch.
The original plan for opening day was to stagger the arrival of guests so that there would be a smooth and orderly flow. The tickets all had specific times so we could spread out all of the arrivals. I was told a crowd management firm had been hired to help, but everyone all showed up at once early. Everyone wanted to come early and see the movie stars and to see what Walt had done after seeing it being built on all of those television shows. It was exciting to see celebrities come in through the front gate, to have them come to my hometown.
But they couldn't get in yet, right? They all showed up at once?
Yeah.
Right.
They had
a parking nightmare. It's just a precursor to...
Rope drop.
Like, the idea that you can tell people, this is when you can get in... The idea that they're not going to show up until then, ha.
That's Disney crazy.
Disney maniacs have been Disney maniacs from day one.
From literally day one.
Yep.
Wow. That is wild.
God. He says, on that first day, several rides broke down and only a few restrooms were working. Walt himself was seen running rolls of toilet paper to some of them. But despite all the snafus, the magic feel of the place rubbed off on people at the very beginning. It was a really hot day, and it was a madhouse.
God. Also, a crowd management firm in the 50s.
Yeah.
What does that even mean? Like, what does that look like?
I mean, it wasn't very effective.
Yeah, apparently.
He says, I was a ticket receptionist at the main gate for only 2 weeks when I was transferred to the trains. After the summer, my boss, Doc Lemon, said to me, you ought to stick around. This place is here to stay. You should get in on the ground floor.
Ah.
I am glad I took the risk. I spent the first winter working on the mule packs and the stagecoach in Frontierland. Within that first year of joining Disney, I was trained on every attraction and was named temporary supervisor of Main Street USA.
Again, my title. Supervisor of Main Street USA.
Temporary.
Permanent. Nah, bah, 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 bah.
Right?
Dictator. God Emperor of Main Street.
Some people say that. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that some people say that.
You.
No.
You're the only one.
But yeah.
You're very cute.
Whatever.
You're precious.
Precious.
He continues, somebody thought I looked a little like Fess Parker, and I ended up playing Davy Crockett on the Mike Fink keelboats for a while.
Hold on. Who is Fess Parker?
The actor.
That played Davy Crockett?
Yeah.
And who's Mike Fink? Mike Fink keel. Wait, no. Mike Fink.
The keelboats. Yeah.
Mike Fink?
I think he was a Disney guy. I think they named,
Everything's named after
like the harbor is named after a guy.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Okay. I don't know why nothing is named after James Ian MacMillan.
Yeah, Jamestown. You have to die first. Don't worry.
I don't know. I mean,
your day will come.
Think about it. Okay. They often name places after what? You know, Imagineers, the people, the construction folks, people who like had a real impact on the parks. What about a 40-year-old guy who gets iced coffee and walks around Main Street, gets in people's way, sort of just, you know, like walks around and has a good time? What about me and my goddamn impact? Where's my Main Street window?
Sarah.
You know?
I don't know what to say now. I have nothing to say to you.
Let's weigh the two.
Okay.
Harper Goth. Friggin' James Ian MacMillan. Oh, oh.
Okay.
Okay.
There She's patting me on the hand.
That's funny.
What? I get no respect around here.
Okay, so Ron is playing Davy Crockett. He says, they put me in a coonskin cap.
That.
We had real jousting contests on the boats, trying to knock the other guy into the water.
That's great. That just sounds fun.
I took my share of dunkings. It got to be embarrassing because I don't care for being in the limelight and guests would ask for autographs and to take photos.
Again, I have that experience.
Our house was located near to where the entrance to Pirates of the Caribbean is today. It was a large Spanish-style two-story house. We had a two-car garage behind the house and a workshop. They made so many changes to the main house, like putting a wall down the middle of my old bedroom upstairs to create two offices, that it didn't seem like my house anymore. It was a strange experience going in there for me. They had moved it backstage, and it had to be torn down in 1958 because of the building of the Grand Canyon diorama back there.
Oh, wow.
They gave me a big sledgehammer and took some publicity shots of me pounding away on my old house. It was very solidly built and took a lot of effort by a construction crew to get it finally down. So by later in 1956, he was named, of course, temporary supervisor of Main Street USA. Mm-hmm. In 1957, Ron became assistant supervisor of Frontierland and went on to supervise Adventureland and Frontierland before being named supervisor of Tomorrowland in 1962. That same year, he became general supervisor of the west side of the park and was later promoted to its manager.
Aw, that is so cute, by the way, these titles. I am supervisor of Adventureland.
By
1970.
Thanks. By 1970, Ron was appointed director of operations and 4 years later was named vice president of Disneyland and chairman of the park operating committee.
Ooh.
By the late 70s, he met his second wife, Betty. They were both cast members at the time.
Cute. Tasty.
They would remain married for 41 years.
Aww.
In 1990, he was named Executive Vice President, Walt Disney Attractions West Coast. Throughout his career, Ron cultivated strong relations with the city of Anaheim, devoting hours of service to local organizations to help pave the way toward the creation of a second local theme park, Disney's California Adventure.
Yeah, buddy.
He got that for us. After 39 years of service to the Walt Disney Company, Ron Dominguez retired in August of 1994. And then in the year 2000, he became a Disney legend.
Oh, what an honor. They'll do that to me in no time.
Yeah.
What? Obviously. What do you guys think? A year? Something like that?
If that.
6 months.
Oh, you think that early?
Yeah.
That's
By
nice.
The end of this year.
That's great. I mean, I'm not trying to like be full of myself, but think of...
No.
I just moved the table so far.
He with has his feet on the table and just bumped it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just think of the impact I've had on the parks.
Yeah.
I am. I'm thinking about it.
And what do you
I'm
think?
I'm still thinking. I'm considering. There's a lot of consideration.
Well, I'd write a list down for everyone, but it would just be a never-ending list. So let's just move on.
All right.
Well, not all good things can last, or actually no good thing can last.
Yeah.
So on New Year's Day, 2021, Ron passed away at the age of 85. No cause of death was given. He was survived by his wife, Betty, three children from a previous marriage, four grandchildren, and a great-grandson.
Aww.
His legacy lives on in other ways as well. The Canary Island date palm tree that stands next to the Jungle River Cruise boathouse in the Adventureland area is commonly known as the Dominguez tree. It was spared at the request of Ron himself, as it was originally planted back in 1896 as a wedding gift to his grandparents.
Hmm.
Whoa.
Wait. The Canary Island date palm tree
mm-hmm.
that stands next to the Jungle River Cruise boathouse?
Yep.
The boathouse? What's the boathouse?
Were you bored?
That's where you get on.
Oh, they're just that's called the boathouse?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a palm tree now. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. That's awesome.
Please, when you're there next week, find it, take a picture, send it
yeah.
to me. I want to see it.
We will.
It's got to be.
I mean, I've seen it hundreds of times, but I've never noticed it. Is it
on the right? Like if you're looking at it?
Yeah.
It's to the right?
Like
to the right of the entrance?
Well, we'll find out when this episode comes out.
Between that and Indiana Jones, basically?
I was thinking that, but I'm not sure.
Now, I was thinking to the left, like... Where you come out.
Oh.
I don't know,
because that's... I don't know. There's not a lot of stuff over there. It's just then that... whatever that cafe thing is called. Well, anyway. This has been Palm Tree Talk with you. Tune in next week.
We're really getting down to the nitty-gritty here.
Yeah.
Without looking it up. Just...
No.
Guessing. Yeah. Just making random guesses.
And here's the truth. We won't find it when we're there.
No, we will.
We'll forget all about it.
Get to the end. We'll forget about it. This podcast is full of empty promises. We'll
yeah,
post it on the
that's
Instagram.
That's true.
We never do. You guys know that. That's why you tune in, baby.
Here's the thing. Our listeners know us
yeah.
because they're like us.
That's right.
So they forget to go look at Instagram to find the thing we promised
yeah,
them.
They forget too. They get roped yeah. into the fun. They're like, ooh, right. I can't wait. But they know that's
and
gonna happen.
If they do care... We never know about it because we're terrible about checking Instagram replies.
Yeah, we're really bad about that. And I'm so sorry, guys.
We're the worst. We are the absolute worst. I'm very sorry.
I'll check every once in a while and there's 100 DMs and they're like, oh, God, these are all good people. They're all so
good people
funny.
That we totally care about and want to hear from.
I went on there recently and saw some stuff that had not been opened and I started replying. And realized it was from like 4 months ago.
Oh,
so no. To anyone who's sent us a message and we haven't responded, just know that someday we probably will.
Just keep checking.
Yeah, just with bated breath.
Yes.
We're like one of those dads that just makes empty promises and never yeah. shows up. And
yeah.
you just wait for them to show up one day and they never do.
Right.
But maybe they
That's
will.
Us.
But maybe they will.
But maybe.
We're deadbeat dads.
Yep.
Heck yeah.
So the Dominguez family agreed to sell their property to Disney on the condition that that tree would be kept.
That's great.
And it still stands there to this day, of course, an obscure and endearing symbol of the pre-Disney history of Anaheim.
There's got to be something, there's got to be someone or a part of the company that it's like, it's their job to keep all these promises. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of stuff like that at the park, especially at Disneyland. There's mm-hmm. a ton of it. We're like... And it's still there to this day, and it will stand the whole time. Like, there has to be...
The Promise Keeper.
The Promise Keeper Committee. And every time they have a construction proposal or whatever...
They have to run it past yeah. the Keymaster.
The Keymaster.
Cute. He says, quote, "There's something from my old orange grove, from that original property that is still at Disneyland, a palm tree. For a long time, it was in the queue for the Jungle Cruise. Walt agreed to save it as part of the deal for buying our property. He was a sentimental guy like my mom, and he saw how important it was to her. Besides, he needed all the trees that he could get. It is a Canary Island date palm, and it was planted in 1896 Woo. As a wedding gift to my grandparents from the area's first horticulturist, Tim Carroll. Life is funny. My daughter married the great-grandson of the guy who gave my grandparents the palm tree.
Whoa.
Today at Disneyland, it is called the Dominguez tree.
No.
Ron's reputation is stellar. You can tell from the stories about him why he'd be called Mr. Disneyland. Disney historian Jim Corcus said, quote, In all my decades of interviewing people who were connected with Disneyland in different capacities, I never heard anyone at any time say anything bad about Ron Dominguez. Quite the contrary, everyone I talked to held him in the highest esteem.
God, this guy sounds just like me.
Man. In 1994, Mary Ann Meng, former public relations manager of Disneyland, said, quote, "I remember meeting Ron and thinking at the time, this is the nicest guy. You could tell there was a quality about him that was unique. He was nice, warm, sincere. All those things rolled into one. And he never changed. He was like that as he ascended the corporate ladder, and he is still the same person."
That's cool. That is so cool.
And then there's Scott Fleener, president of the Order of the Red Handkerchief, which is the oldest alumni club in Disneyland.
I love this.
And it's made up of people associated with the mine train ride through Nature's Wonderland, where Dominguez once worked.
So good.
Fleener said, quote, "He was a natural leader who took the time to develop future leaders from cast members. Ron was a very friendly, and one of the things he said was, the higher I go up, the more I miss getting to know the people who work in the park. If he or his wife were to look back now, I would say he had a great life. He was one of the nicest guys I've ever known. Sometimes nice guys do finish first."
Yes.
Ron Dominguez was given a window on Main Street. It's over the Market House, the Starbucks, and it says, "Orange Grove Property Management, Ron Dominguez, owner." Quote, "We'll care for your property as if it were our own."
Wow. That's the window?
Yep.
That's cool.
That's rad. I'll have to take a
picture. I did find the tree. I sent you guys a picture. Okay. It is, if you're looking at the Jungle Cruise, it's to the right of like the tower.
That's just what I was thinking of.
Yeah, but it's kind of tucked back.
Oh,
it's not front and center. It's a huge tree that's like behind everything.
So do you think it's, is it like... behind the water, the first canal part of the ride?
I don't know.
It's on the side where you are.
Okay. Right. In between Indy and Jungle
Cruise.
On
the side where you are.
Right.
Wow.
Somehow knew what you meant. That's awesome.
Okay. Well, my sources for this episode were the Disney Wiki, Mouse Planet, Atlas Obscura, D23, and the Orange County Register.
Sweet. Hell yeah. Beautiful. Well done as always, Ashley.
I always get like kind of giddy when I think about the park having had like homes there and how long they actually were there. Like the idea that there was a house still within the gates, more than one house still within the gates for a long time.
Yeah.
Could you see them from like if you were a guest, could you see them?
I don't know. They might have at first when they were part of like the administrative or the on the Main Street offices. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But for the most part, they were all behind scenes.
Because I can't think of any like old pictures or footage where you can see any of those houses. But maybe I just didn't know what I was looking for.
Yeah, I think they're pretty much backstage.
Yeah. Huh.
I know. I love thinking about because I'm a plant nerd and like I have... wisteria that was propagated from this one that was given to my great uncle's like family. So it's like an old plant.
And Uncle Don?
Yeah, Uncle Don. So like, you know, I totally appreciate the like looking around and thinking like, oh, okay, maybe this was like along a road and they cut it or they dug it up and put it in here. And,
right. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Something I was thinking this whole time as you were reading that, Ash, we're talking about the right before the opening of the park and then the opening of the park in the first decade or so. And it's always a good reminder, or it's good for us to remember that the park was open July of 1955, right? Well, World War II had been, I think it wrapped in 1944 for the Allies. I think I'm right there. Something like that. 44, maybe 45.
Yeah, it can have been 44 because my great uncle died in 45.
I was thinking it was 48.
No, it's not that late. Because we declared war in 42.
I was thinking 47, so we're all great.
Yeah, it was in the 40s, you know.
The global conflict was 1935 to 1945. and the U.S. was 42, I guess, to 45.
Okay.
So there you go. So yeah, anyway, it just, you know, post-World War II, there's no way to really convey the impact on not just our country, but the world post-World War II, and how much of a, like, jubilation there, how much of a celebration there was in society to be done with the war, to be moving on. That's where the baby boomer thing happened.
I was just going to say, all the baby boomers were booming at that moment.
Oh, they're all pounding each other. Sucking.
Squirting out babies.
I was waiting for a sucking and fucking.
Sucking and fucking, man.
We made it all the way to this point before we pulled it out.
They got home and they got to work.
Essen and effing.
Essen and effing. And old Walt.
Walty pants.
Walty pantsies. He went to work too.
In more ways than one.
Yeah. It's just what a wild time. And it's also like, I think the reason I brought it up is because it's such a, Disneyland opening in that time was such a reflection of that time. Like this happy.
Growth. Like, just celebratory.
Yeah. Crazy, creative, ambitious.
And kind of indulgent.
Very indulgent. It was very 50s to do.
Yeah, to go from rationing and Victory Gardens to, I'm going to go to a theme park and just have fun.
Yeah. And people did.
Yep.
Let's pretend we're in space. Let's pretend we're, well, not space yet, but you know.
No, it's like the plaque on the bridge as you walk through. That is what the park is all about. It's great. I love doing these Disney episodes, huh?
Yeah.
It's almost like we're called Disney dependent.
Sometimes we do. Sometimes we cover Disney. Sometimes we don't.
Yeah.
You know what? It doesn't change the fact that we are Disney dependent.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, heroin addicts also have to eat food and...
Yeah.
If they don't, that's why they die.
We've been to the park twice since we moved here. We've been here since the end of January, so...
Yeah, I know. That. Rub it in. Jeez.
And we're going again April 1st with Ashley's and my friend Jen. We're doing a full dayer. And we're possibly even going downtown Disney the night before. And get this, Sarah.
Uh-huh.
Because I'll drop some shit.
Oh.
I'll leave names out. Our friend from Walt's Chili Bowl reached out and gave us a hookup on the Disney cast member store. So like the Nike store, you know? Yeah, and it's Friends and Family Week or whatever. So they only open it up for 1 week a year, and she got us an in, so we're on the list.
So we're going tomorrow.
Sweet.
Yeah, we're gonna go tomorrow and work from there through the day and then dip in.
Yeah.
How fun.
I think we did it, dude.
I think we have recommended content we need to share, though.
Yeah, I didn't mean like we did an episode. I mean, we did that part. Now it's time for
the
recommendation. Of course, of course.
Yeah. Do you have anything, Sarah?
I sure do. And I'm not even going to look anything up. I'm just going to wing it here.
Wing it.
There is a movie called Yesterday. Have you guys seen it yet?
Oh, yeah.
Twice. Love it.
Okay. Yep. It's so freaking cute. Yep. I adore it.
What a great premise, huh?
Yeah. Premise is this guy.
Danny Boyle, right?
A singer-songwriter, and he's not really doing great. He's like singing in basically empty clubs and bars and cafes and stuff. And he's got like one song that his friends all keep requesting, and it's pretty bad. And he basically tells his best friend, who is clearly a love interest, that he's done. He's like, I'm going to go back to teaching. I'm over it. It's just not happening for me. You know, thanks for all your support, blah, blah, blah. He's riding his bike home and the power goes out worldwide. And he simultaneously gets hit by a bus, wakes up in the hospital a few days later. And from there, he starts realizing that certain things from the past never existed. They never really get into why or how or anything like that, but the idea is that the Beatles never existed, but he has the memory of all of the songs,
right?
And
but no one else does.
But there's only a handful of people in the world that actually remember it.
He
at first he thinks he's the only one.
He thinks he's the only one.
Well, and so he only has the memory of whatever he remembers. So he doesn't remember every bit of every song. He remembers some because he was a massive Beatles fan.
So it's like trying to work out like the lyrics and
yeah.
It's cute how it starts out. He's like in the hospital bed and his friend is walking away and he says, "Will you still love me? Or will you still, how does the line go? Will you still
need me?
Will you still feed me when I'm 64? Mm-hmm. And she laughs and she goes, "Why 64? And then just leaves the room.
Yeah.
And he's like,
"Wait, what? How do you not know what that is?
That reference.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?" And yeah, it just, it keeps getting funnier and weirder. And yeah,
he becomes like really successful.
He becomes
and
a
famous
huge celebrity with the help of Ed Sheeran, the real Ed Sheeran.
Who showers him with compliments, is like, "You are our best songwriter ever." Because yes. Everyone thinks he wrote these amazing, like, you know, Penny Lane and Hey Jude and, you know, all these classic
Let
songs.
Let It Be. Which his parents refer to as like, Let It Go.
Let It Go. Yeah, that song. Play that song. Let It Go.
Leave It Be.
How many times he starts playing it and then they just start talking through it. And he's like, "What are you doing?
So
this
perfect.
Is Let It Be."
Yeah.
But yeah, part of it is that nobody can understand how he suddenly knows is able to write these beautiful songs in a matter of days.
Yeah.
He goes from having one shitty song that he plays everywhere to having this full catalog.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really cute, heartwarming movie. And I love that it's never been done before. I've never seen that concept before.
No,
of course,
great.
Like you wake up and don't remember something or whatever. But the fact that he does and no one else does is like reverse amnesia.
Mm-hmm. And that he does something with it to benefit his own life. It's pretty
clever.
But
it's funny too, because it's not just that people don't remember it. It's it never happened. And
right.
The Beatles, the four Beatles, are alive in the world. They're just not the Beatles.
Yep.
Yeah. No, it's a great movie. I definitely
would. That was a ton of spoilers, but it's not like one of those movies where you're just like, "Oh my gosh, what's going to happen?" It's just the experience is great. It's a really cute movie.
I think all of that was covered in the trailer, so.
I think so too. I knew all of that before I watched it.
Yeah.
And the director is, of course, Danny Boyle, who has done mm-hmm. so many great movies. Slumdog Millionaire, Trainspotting.
Millions. 28
millions
Days Later.
And then 127 Hours.
127 Hours.
A movie called Sunshine, which is one of our
Sunshine.
Favorite movies.
So many movies that we've recommended before on the podcast.
Beach. Yeah, great director. All right. Good pick, Sarah. That's a really fun movie. It's also a really feel-good movie. It'll make you feel good.
It was nice, too, because I had some stuff I had to do while I was watching it. And it's one of those, you don't have to watch super close.
No.
Because it's a lot of it's about the dialogue.
Right.
And the music. And so much is happening, you know, you don't need to actually watch super closely.
Absolutely. All right. My turn. Okay. My pick is a movie that we just saw in the theater. It's the new Ghostbusters movie. It's called Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. It is good. I really liked it. It has an interesting review online, like with Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. The critics are a little harsh on it, but the audience score is close to 90%. So the people love it. And that's all. I'm a man of the people, baby. it's exactly what it... I mean, it's what it should be. And you have to remember that these movies, Ghostbusters, whatever, Back to the Future, these were all silly goose movies when they came out, for Christ's sake. And it's not like they're the Godfather. They're silly movies about ghost busting. Busting makes me feel good. That's what it's about. It's great. I really liked it. I thought it was a really good follow-up. The one before it, which is the other
Afterlife.
New one, yeah. That was like almost like a different take on Ghostbusters. I don't know if you saw
Which
that,
I
Sarah,
loved.
But it's really great. I would highly recommend watching that before you watch the new one.
Okay.
Because it establishes who this family is now and how they all became a family. Yeah, and that one's really crazy because it's based in Oklahoma, I think. Like on a farm in a field in Oklahoma. So it's not New York City. They're not Ghostbusters yet. They just, it's the daughter of Harold Ramis's character.
Mm-hmm.
And her two kids. She's a single mom. And then she meets Paul Rudd, who's a school teacher in Oklahoma, to the kids. And then they have like a romantic thing. Long story short, he basically becomes stepdad. And then so the second one is after that.
Yeah,
and
they're in New York.
Now they're in New York.
At the fire department.
At the fire station. The firehouse. So it's real classic Ghostbuster shit. Yeah. They're using the theme song. It's on. And Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, and the other guy. What is his name?
Winston.
Yeah, the guy that plays Winston. Ernie Hudson. That's why I didn't know it.
Yes, of course.
And Annie Potts.
Yeah, that's right. And Annie Potts. And the guy that's the
mayor.
The mayor, William Atherton.
Atherton.
And he looks incredible. Everyone looks great. Dan Aykroyd is straight up in the movie.
Yeah, he's great.
He's like one of the characters.
And his nose, I must add, is starting to look more and more like the fake nose that he wears in Nothing But Trouble that is basically a penis head on his nose, which is fun.
A deep cut, Ashton. I like that about you. That's one of the worst movies ever made, and I adore it.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Nothing But Trouble?
Dude.
You'll hate it.
I don't know that I've ever seen it.
Oh my God. You have to, whatever you're doing tonight, just get that off your schedule. Go ahead and watch Nothing But Trouble.
I'm sorry.
It's unbelievably bad.
It goes in crazy places.
It's crazy. And it has nothing but stars in it. That's the wild thing.
Yeah.
Demi Moore. Like
Chevy Chase.
Dan Aykroyd. It's the top of the top of the time. John Candy. It's amazing.
Well, back to Ghostbusters, anyway. Frozen Empire. I was hesitant because I'm like, I love Ghostbusters.
Right.
Sequels suck.
Right.
I don't know what to think. But I did like the Afterlife one, and I will say I had a lot of fun. I was pleasantly surprised.
It's fun. It was great.
It felt very Ghostbusters-y.
It's a nice popcorn flick. Good to go, baby.
Yeah. The animal hero of the week is a YouTube star named Professor Pouncey.
Do I know about this guy?
You do. You sent me him.
Oh, that'd be why I know about him.
I'm still working my way through everything you've sent me.
Yeah.
He's an adventurous chatty Bengal cat that lives with his family in Isle Erie, Pennsylvania.
Yes, I love this one.
He rides around in a specially designed heated basket on the front of his buddy Adam's e-bike.
Dude, Sarah, you gotta check out Professor Pouncey.
Professor Pouncey.
Professor Pouncey. Okay. Just type that into YouTube. Have fun.
One time this fall, he had to emergency bail out of the front basket of the e-bike.
Yeah.
And he got lost in the thick Pennsylvania forest. But Adam kept searching for him and calling out for him. And eventually he replied back, meow.
No.
He's a good dude, and I love him.
Yeah, he's pretty cool. He knows how to climb up on the bike.
He rode a dirt bike once.
He rode a dirt bike. He's cool as hell, man. He's an action cat.
I'm looking him up right now. Hey. Professor Pouncey.
He's an action cat.
Pisses me off. Pisses me off that all four of my useless cats can't do any of this. Ugh.
Trash animals.
God. They would just curl up and cry. We tried to take Benny out once. He just lays on his stomach like a slug and won't move.
I mean, to be fair, that's kind of what he does, though.
That's true.
That's true. I got Kate a cat backpack for Christmas.
Oh.
And so she's taken Gus out for a few adventures.
You mean you got it for this Christmas we already had?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure you didn't get it in March.
Oh, God. Do you think that I'm that ahead of schedule? I don't know where I'm going to be living at Christmas.
No kidding. Oh, God.
All right.
All right. We did it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Disney Dependent.
See you real soon. Woo! You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Disney Dependent.
And you can send us an email at DisneyDependent@gmail.com.
This podcast is produced by Producer Ash.
The logo is by Ryan Hatch, and you can find him at WR Hatch on Instagram. The music is by Ryan Knowles, and you can find him at Ryan Allen Knowles on Instagram.
This show is mixed and edited by Deanna Chapman. You can find Deanna at Deanna_Chapman. And this has been a Team Dynamite Goat production. All right. Well, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll be back here next week.